And welcome to this very special edition of National Football Authority Radio. As always, I am Matt Baxter. I am your host. And tonight we have one subject and one subject only. We're talking, of course, about the latest game of the century coming up this Saturday night between the LSU Tigers and the Alabama Crimson Tide, 8 p.m. primetime. It's the biggest game in college football in the regular season in probably the last 5 years. So we're going to bring on a lot of people to discuss it here tonight. Joining us in a little while are going to be Daniel Wolf and Janine Lejeune. They are going to discuss this back and forth. Dan covers the Alabama Crimson Tide for National Football Authority. And, of course, Janine's located down on the bayou, so she knows all about the LSU Tigers. But before we get to that, we're going to bring on Nate Custer. He is our college football editor-in-chief. And, Nate, how are you doing tonight, man?
Doing fantastic. Getting excited for, as you called it, the game of the century. We're all just chomping at the bit. I'm frothing at the mouth right now just looking at this game.
Well, you know, it's certainly going to be one heck of a game. I think this is probably the biggest regular season game we've seen since Ohio State and Michigan, who were also number one and number two, met the end of the 2006 regular season. But, you know, with the SEC in recent years winning five consecutive national titles, I think there's a little more behind this one. I think a lot of people are looking at this as a de facto national championship game, which, of course, we did at the Ohio State-Michigan game a while back, but this is in early November. It's not the end of the season. Nate, I guess, give me your initial thoughts on this game, and do you really think that these are the clear-cut top two teams in the country?
Right now, they most certainly are. I won't even get into my my Boise State ramblings, because I know the folks in the SEC don't even want to hear about that, so let's talk about it. I am perfectly at ease with saying that the SEC ball being played right now is the premier football conference in the country. We all want to see these two powerhouse teams go at it. Trent Richardson, the Honey Badger. I mean, this is what football is all about in college, in the college world. So we get to see a really fantastic game coming our way. I cannot wait for this. I mean, we're talking snot flying, big hits. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is going to be a fantastic football game. And, you know, I also agree with these are the top two teams in the country this year. You know, we both vote in the National Football Authority top 25 poll for college football. And, you know, I have LSU number one.
Yep,
I have Alabama number two. But you know what? I think we both have to think about this one a little, because LSU is both of our number one team, but this game is at Alabama. And since 1970, there's been 20 games that have been played at Alabama in this series. Alabama is 16-4 at home, so there's a big advantage for the Crimson Tide based on pure history. Do you think LSU can really overcome that? I mean, the last time we saw a number one versus number two team was the Ohio State-Michigan game, of course, and Michigan only lost by a field goal at Ohio State. So, you know, the home field advantage essentially worked out. You always hear the home team get the field goal. Is this something kind of we're going to see between these two teams, or do you think it maybe won't be that close?
I don't think it matters in this realm right now. In Les Miles' tenure there at LSU, he's actually not had too much of a problem with winning in Tuscaloosa. In fact, since the 2005 season, in those games, we're looking at a record of 4-2 for him. So he's done relatively well with that. So it really doesn't matter much. That means he's got two wins at Tuscaloosa during that time. He's only lost in Tuscaloosa once. Alabama's been pretty solid over that time period. So, I mean, there's been a couple of moments where they haven't been as strong as they are the last couple of years. But make no bones about it, it ain't going to matter where the ball game is played. It's about who's the best team.
I couldn't agree with you more. Right now, you know, these two teams are, in many respects, I think, a mirror image of each other. You know, they both play fantastic defense. They both have absolutely drilled everybody they've played this year. I don't think anybody's come within 10 points of either one of these teams this year. And, you know, when you look at their offenses, they both feature a really pounding running game where the passing is almost an afterthought. I mean, on one side, Trent Richardson and Lacy are two of the best tailbacks in the country. But then you look at this stable that LSU has with Spencer Ware and company. I mean, Ware was suspended against Auburn, and all they decided to do was pull a guy off the bench who hadn't played all year. And in the first time he plays all year, he runs for 100 yards against Auburn. So you're talking about two teams that are going to try to line up and punch you in the mouth.
You know what I like, though, about this Alabama team is the fact that they're not requiring too much of their young quarterback at this point. They're allowing him to just manage the game. He's not putting up amazing stats anywhere when it comes to, you know, the airing it out for 300-plus yards per game. It's very manageable stats. And when you have a guy like Trent Richardson being able to pound the ball like he does, it's pretty amazing to see him break off those big runs. But that just gives him the quarterback a chance to really just kind of get comfortable with the ball game, and they allow him to just manage the game. And that is what they've done exceptionally well. But when you look at LSU, I mean, gosh, that defense is just punishing. I mean, you understand that this is a part of the SEC regimen of how they play defense there, but it is really, really something special. And that's not to take anything away from Alabama, but at the same time, the Honey Badger is just too much fun to watch. He's back for this game. He's been teasing it for how long? We wrote about it. You know, Janine's written about that on nationalfootballauthority.com, and we finally get to see the Honey Badger back in action.
Yeah, and you know, that thing about the honey badger, if you will. Of course, we're talking about Tyrann Mathieu. He's a guy who, you know, both you and I also vote in the Heisman Power Poll that we do on NationalFootballAuthority.com. Mm-hmm. And multiple times throughout this year, I've had Tyrann Mathieu in my top three. I mean, I've never seen a player who is directly involved in so many turnovers and huge plays on the defensive side of the football. And that really started off at the beginning of the season against Oregon, where LSU played them at Cowboy Stadium, and Mathieu stripped a fumble right away off of a punt return, and from there he's not stopped. The only thing that stopped him is himself when he didn't get to play last week against Auburn. So, yeah. You know, I think you're looking at really it's going to be an interesting battle between two teams who probably have the two non-quarterback Heisman candidates this year in Trent Richardson and Mathieu. I think what it comes down to, though, between these two teams, whenever we're talking about who's actually going to win the game, is which team's going to make less mistakes. Now, putting it that way, Nate, which team do you really think is going to make fewer mistakes in this game, and which team is going to be the one that protects the football the best?
Well, I don't know which team's going to come out with less mistakes. I do think that you're going to see some problems with A.J. McCarron, the quarterback. I think he's going to be pressured more than he has been at any other point in the season facing that LSU offense. But at the same time, I would not be surprised to see at least four or five total turnovers in this game. And if it goes beyond that, we are going to be looking at something really interesting to watch in that game. You look at the way these two defenses play, mistakes are going to be made. And you can watch these two teams and their defenses capitalize on that. So I'm expecting to see a little bit of sloppiness going on, not because the teams are getting sloppy, but because these teams are so good at forcing turnovers.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. This is one of those games where it's the defenses that are going to set the tone. I mean, we've talked about this the whole time. The defenses have been the difference makers for these two teams. I think a lot of the reason that people have these teams number one and number two is just because of the sheer quality of their defensive players. And when you look at the respective quarterbacks on the team, whether it's A.J. McCarron or the Lee and Jefferson combo on LSU's side, we're not talking about elite quarterbacks on either side of the football in this game. Where the teams are elite are in the trenches and on defense. And I think it's going to be really, really interesting to watch it play out. But, Nate, before we bring on Dan and Janine, I think that we're going to have to ask you one simple question here. Nate, I need to know who you think is going to win this football game.
I'm taking LSU by six.
LSU by six. Wow, that would make you some money in Vegas if that pulled off, because a lot of the money seems to be coming in Alabama in the early going.
Yep. I'm taking LSU by six. I know it's kind of a gutsy call, but hey, that's why the game is played, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't understand how anybody can really make fun of somebody's picking this game. We're talking about the number one or number two teams in the country. So I think it's going to be a fantastic exhibition. And, Nate, thanks for coming on here tonight. We look forward to talking to you again here soon on National Football Authority Radio.
Take care, Bax.
All right. Well, that was Nate Custer, ladies and gentlemen. He's our college football editor-in-chief. And we're going to move on now to a little bit more of a roundtable discussion. We're going to bring in Daniel Wolf. We're going to bring in Janine Lejeune. And, Dan, Janine, how are you two doing tonight?
Doing well.
I'm good.
Excellent. Well, you know, I think we got a little bit of a dichotomy here between the two of you. Obviously, Janine, you just have to hear your name, and I think everybody knows you're from Cajun country down there talking about the LSU Tigers. I want to take you back a little bit here to the start of the season. I remember we were all having our discussions about what we thought LSU was really going to look like this year. In the preseason, they had the suspension issue with Jefferson, and a lot of us were really wondering whether the LSU was going to be able to live up to their promise. They've turned around in such a stark manner since then, now they're the number one team in the country. How do you think LSU's mindset is going into this game? And I guess, how has the feeling been around Baton Rouge with this just enormous, enormous game ready to go?
Well, according to Baton Rouge, there's no other games going on at this point. I think they've postponed all the other games, if you ask any of them. You know, but I think that the preseason kind of just was very foreboding, and it kind of goes back to last week as well. You would think a suspension would kill a team preseason with all the distractions. Didn't do it. You would think losing three of your best players would, you know, there's no way you can win now. Okay, they're going to come back down to earth, and they still haven't. And I don't think there's with 2 weeks to prepare, I think their mindset's completely clear.
Well, I think a lot of people have to agree with you on that one. Getting back three of their key players, especially when it's two of their biggest playmakers in Spencer Ware and Tyrann Mathieu, it's a huge advantage for them. Now, before we go over to Daniel and talk about Alabama, I want to go over the LSU schedule. I mean, if you look at the teams that these two teams have played, I don't think there's much arguing saying that LSU has played the more difficult road Oregon in Dallas, on the road at West Virginia, even against Mississippi State on the road, which is their toughest contest, they still won by 13 points. And then, of course, they drilled Auburn 2 weeks ago. Do you think that the tests that they have maybe prepared them a little better than Alabama, especially since they're going to be on the road in this game?
I think so. I mean, Les Miles keeps bringing up the fact that, for some odd reason, this team loves to play on the road. So this week should be no different than any of their September games. You know, as far as that mindset goes. Now, is it going to be a lot more hard hitting and stuff? Of course, but.
Well, I have to agree with you that I think this is going to be sort of in their wheelhouse. I mean, think about it here with LSU, too. This is, what, the fifth or sixth ranked team they've played this year? I mean, that's incredible. That's just an incredibly difficult schedule, and they've really risen to the occasion in every possible situation. But let's bring in Dan here. Now, Dan, there's a little bit of a dichotomy between these two teams when you look at the head coaches. Obviously, Les Miles at LSU is kind of considered a riverboat gambler. He's a guy who eats grass. He's a guy who never really know what you're going to get from him. On the other side of the ball, you have Saban Tron. I mean, he's a machine sent to coach college football at Alabama, and they have played like it this year. Their closest game was beating an 8-1 Penn State team that right now. They beat them in Happy Valley by 16 points. And they also happen to have the home field advantage. Bryant Denny Stadium, 101,000 screaming fans. Alabama really has a lot of advantages in this game. I guess, what do you think is going to be the difference in preparation here with, say, Nick Saban, who is such a X's and O's guy, versus Les Miles, who, in many respects, nobody really knows what the heck he's going to do on any given play?
Well, the advantage is going to be with the home field advantage, I think. The fact that they'll have the crowd backing them up. I mean, X's and O's all set aside. When you have 101 plus thousand people chanting and screaming, I think that just speaks volumes. You know, Nick Saban is the type of guy where he is completely blunt, you know, as we've seen, and forward when it comes to his press conferences. And I think that's just the mentality that he's going to give to his team. And, you know, the team's going to be so focused and so angry, perhaps, that as soon as they get out into that field and hear that crowd cheering, I think that's just a huge advantage for Alabama going into this game tomorrow night.
Well, another thing, too, about Alabama. It's Saturday night. Who knows? This will be up on NFLFootball40.com on Friday, so it's technically tomorrow night for anybody listening.
I'm just so excited. I just want it to be Saturday night, you know, tomorrow.
I think we always want it to be Saturday night, especially in the fall during college football season. But I will say this, too, is that, you know, another thing about this game I think is going to be very, very interesting to watch play out is that Alabama's track record at home, like you were mentioning with the home field advantage, is exceptional. The locker room at the University of Alabama Stadium is actually called the Fail Room. And ever since it was officially dubbed the Fail Room, only one team has won at Alabama, and that was Auburn last year in the Iron Bowl. So, you know, you have an Alabama team that just simply doesn't lose games at home. But let's talk about some of the key players on the Alabama Crimson Tide here. First and foremost, of course, is Trent Richardson, who I think is in the top five on almost everybody's Heisman list. What do you think is going to be sort of the impact of having a running back who can bench press 500 pounds going up against one of the best defensive front sevens in the country?
Well, you know, speaking of his bench pressing, you know, the coaches kind of put a limit on that. And I think just once, just for the heck of it, they should just see what he maxes out at. I mean, just for science reasons, because, you know, if this guy can bench press 700 pounds or whatever the ridiculous number that he claims, I mean, let's just see it once and put it on YouTube, please, you know. but getting to the point, though, I think that what you see with Trent Richardson is you're seeing the emergence of the next big workhorse running back.
Trent Richardson is playing at a level beyond almost any other tailback in college football right now.
Yes, Trent Richardson is a workhorse running back. He's a very rare breed, and he's the type of guy who is emerging right in front of our eyes. I honestly haven't seen a running back run the way that Richardson does since perhaps Adrian Peterson did in his days in Oklahoma. He's just got that type of big body. And the one thing that people are always discussing with me on Twitter at Daniel Wolf NFL is that he's a product of the system. And truth be told, he could be a product of the system, but at the same time, that's the same system that Mark Ingram was in. And, you know, Richardson is by far just running at a more impressive level than Mark Ingram ever did, in my opinion. And I've been watching Alabama for the last 3 years since the season that they won the national championship in 2009. You don't see defenders bounce off of a running back the way that you do with Trent Richardson, at least in recent memory.
And the way that his statistics compare to Ingram's really just that it's not close. Richardson's stats have been much more that of a workhorse. And granted, Ingram had Richardson as a guy to pair with him, so you got to see both of them at the time. But I think we've seen Richardson really take on a whole different level of being a workhorse. Even though he does have a really good change of pace in Eddie Lacy, he's a very underrated back because everybody wants to talk about Richardson, and he's playing behind such a strong offensive line. But there's two very good tailbacks in that backfield. Now, Dan, I want to ask
you about that. Not only that, but you know, then there's Fowler, who's the third guy, and you know, he's even been rattling off 70-yard touchdown runs in relief of Richardson and Lacy. So, you know, whatever Nick Saban is doing to recruit these running backs, I mean, they seem to only get bigger and stronger and faster. And, you know, that's if Richardson leaves after this season, which, you know, his draft stock is sky high right now, I mean, they're set for a few more years.
Well, that's what happens when you're a recruiting powerhouse like Alabama. And it certainly doesn't hurt that these two schools are also two of the biggest schools who oversign in college football. But that's a completely different topic that we'll have to get to at another time. Now, I want to go to one more thing about Alabama here before we go back to LSU and with Jeannie. And I wanted to ask you this year about A.J. McCarron. Look, when he's been given the chance to throw, he's looked pretty good. But I think, honestly, this year Nick Saban's looking at it in sort of a Woody Hayes-esque way and saying, why do we need to throw the ball when we're just going to bludgeon people with Trent Richardson? My big question is that if they have to pass against this LSU defense to move the ball, if the LSU front seven shuts them down, can McCarron get the job done, especially without a true number one receiver like they've had the last couple of years with Julio Jones?
Well, I would almost compare it to, and I'm going to use more of an NFL reference because I'm more of an NFL guy. I'm going to go back to the 2005 season when there was a rookie quarterback named Ben Roethlisberger who all of a sudden had to fill in and start playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers on the road to them winning a Super Bowl. He came into a situation, and yes, he did have a number one receiver, but he had just a running game that was huge. And some games, you know, the running game was shut down, and he did have to throw the ball. And my comparison here is, you know, Richardson, if he can't run the rock, which, you know, remains to be seen if anyone can really stop him at this point, and I guess LSU would be that team to do it. But when called upon, A.J. McCarron should be able to do the job. He doesn't have a true number one receiver, but he does have some younger guys. DeAndre White is one of the guys that's been stepping up as of late. And, you know, of course, there's Marquise Mays, who, you know, is kind of their pseudo number one guy right now and more their speedster.
Mays has been a big part of their team the last 3 years. He played a big role in the national championship season.
He has, and he has struggled because of McCarron being a new quarterback. But at the same time, I think that McCarron, this is one of those games where you're going to see what kind of quarterback McCarron can really be if LSU can actually shut down the running attack of Alabama. It's kind of a make or break game for the quarterback position if Richardson's held in check.
Well, that's not certainly a big concern if the running game can't get going for Alabama, but let's flip it to the other side of the coin here and bring Jeannine back in. Jeannine, we've been talking about the running game for Alabama and whether or not A.J. McCarron can get the job done. The passing question is a little bit more interesting when it comes to LSU because they don't have one quarterback, they have two. Now, if LSU can't get the ball going, I think we can all agree, probably has the better receivers. I mean, you're talking about guys like Shepard and Beckham who have been doing exceptionally well at getting deep this year. I mean, how many times did Shepard get behind the Auburn defense 2 weeks ago? Which quarterback do you think we're going to see more in this game, or is it going to be Lee and Jefferson splitting time fairly equally?
I could see it being split fairly equally because you're going to want to have Jefferson out there because Les, that's his dual threat guy. But at the same point in time, Jared has had great success against Alabama. He had a really good game last year against them and is their better passing quarterback. And he's had really good chemistry with Reuben Randall this year.
Well, Randall definitely had a – I mean, how many long touchdowns did Randall have against Auburn? Was it, I think, one, two? He got behind the defense a couple times.
One from each guy.
So, Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see how this works out. I mean, I've sort of been wondering about LSU all year. My big question about them all year has not been anything except for the quarterback rotation, because while Jared Jefferson was suspended, it was clear it was Lee. Lee seemed to have gotten over that spell he had a couple years ago where he threw a ton of pick sixes and really hurt his team. Do you think LSU can really sustain it with having a quarterback rotation? Because I don't remember the last time a team was a national championship caliber team that didn't have a clear-cut number one quarterback.
Well, even in 2007 LSU won, Brian Perilou did see a significant amount of time, and it did actually help in the SEC championship game when Matt Flynn was out with the injury. But like you said, Matt Flynn was the number one guy. I think as it stands, everyone knows Jarrett Lee's the starter and is going to be the starter for the foreseeable future. But as long as they're both fighting to be a starter, it's actually kind of been working well because they're both preparing as the starter and they're both really showing on the field.
Well, you can't argue with the results, that's for sure. Now, coming to this particular game coming up, you're talking about the stoutest defense that LSU has faced all year. We've mentioned how good their receivers have been. You know, I mean, like you mentioned, Randall had two long touchdown passes from each of the different quarterbacks. Now, having a guy like Spencer Ware back to provide some balance is going to be a big deal, but I think if you're talking about LSU on offense here, because let's face it with these two teams, we're talking about defenses that are just loaded with playmakers. The defenses, I think, have to be a given here. I don't think either defense is really going to give up a lot. Now, but if LSU is going to get the job done, do you think it's going to be hitting a deep ball like that to Randall, like he had against Auburn in a couple of those big plays? Or do you think it's going to be them just pounding the ball and sort of beating Alabama into submission in the trenches? Is this just going to be a case of the toughest team wins?
It's going to be a lot of the toughest team wins because with LSU all year, it's been, oh, you think you're going to stop our run? No, no, we're going to keep running. We're going to keep running. And in the fourth quarter, you're going to be so tired, we're going to still be running. And their passing and running attacks have both been very balanced from it all year. I think the Auburn game was the only one that was really lopsided as far as passing goes. But
well, that happens when you hit 70, 80-yard touchdown passes. There's, you know, the statistics
exactly.
Get a little lopsided then. So, you know, I think I have to agree with you there, though, that, you know, the running game for LSU has been downright vicious this year. And I think this is really one of the interesting things about this game is we're looking at two teams that may have completely different personalities as their head coach, but we're talking about two philosophies that are about as similar as you're going to get. And I think that this is going to be really whichever one of these teams shows up and wins the battle in the trenches.
It doesn't get more NFL-like and college level than this game.
Well, you can't argue with that. I think you're going to look at these two teams and see that a lot of the people who play in this game are going to be playing in the NFL next year, the year after, and even the year after that. This is one of those games where, you know, I remember the Ohio State-Miami national title game from 2002. Something like 60 guys between those two teams who were on the rosters for that game ended up in the NFL. And in 5 years, we may see something very similar between the rosters of these two teams in this game. So we're really going – I mean, I people call it the Super Bowl of college football that we're having this weekend. I think it's pretty appropriate just because of the sheer talent level. Now, before we get to the picks in the game here, though, I do want to touch on that very, very, very briefly. We're talking about two teams that play in the SEC West that signed some of the highest numbers of recruits in the country. And, you know, you're talking about two guys that, let's face it, their least favorite website on the Internet is probably oversigning.com. We talk about all the talent and all the depth from these two teams. You kind of have to wonder where it all comes from. And part of it's great recruiting. Part of it, I think, is a little bit of the oversigning here. And I'm not going to touch on this too long because it's going to take a little bit away from the game itself, and I don't want to do that because this is clearly a huge game. But you have to look at the recruiting practices of these two head coaches. And they can bring in 10 guys every January to compete with practice and then transfer certain kids out. It gives them a huge advantage. And I think that's something that we're going to be very interested to see in the future with the multi-year scholarship rule that's been proposed by the NCAA. So, Janine, I'm going to go back to you real quick on this one. There's a lot of flack thrown at Les Miles nationally, and the same for Nick Saban here, so that people don't think we're accusing one side or the other. Is there a lot of people in Baton Rouge who really seem to even care about oversigning? Or as long as he wins the games, they don't really seem to matter at all, right?
It's not the most concerning thing, let's put it that way.
It's all about the results on the field.
As long as it's not big NCAA violations, I think everyone's pretty happy.
Yeah, as long as you win the football games, I have to agree with you there. And I know that's been Nick Saban's attitude about it. He won't even release the scholarship numbers for Alabama. But, all right, well, then I think at this point we have to all agree these are two of the most talented teams in the country. One last thing before we get to our picks. you heard a lot of scuttlebutt going around on the various media sphere, the blog sphere, ESPN, NationalFootballAuthority.com even. Everybody's talking about if this is a close game, should we see a rematch in the national title game? Now, I'm going to throw this one to you first, Dan. If one of these two teams wins in close fashion, a very, very narrow game, let's say by a field goal, do you see a scenario where these two teams could meet again in January in New Orleans?
Logically speaking, I would love to, but let's be honest in saying that the BCS structure probably won't let that happen.
Okay, fair enough. Janine, what about you?
I'd say no, but I was convinced twice in 2007 LSU wasn't making it to the title game. I mean, I was open, like, there's no way on the day after Thanksgiving, and yet miracles occurred, apparently, on the next day, and LSU found its way back in. So I'm going to say what never say never.
Never say never, that's for sure. I mean, I think we can all agree that if a team like Stanford or Oklahoma State finishes the year undefeated, then I doubt we'll see a rematch. One thing I do think would be an interesting study to have as a discussion, and for the record, I'm not in favor of a rematch. I think if you have two teams from any conference in the national title game, you're essentially shutting out every other team. And when you don't play a semi-round-robin schedule like you see in the NFL where you play a lot of teams from other divisions, I mean, college football is very provincial, no matter what the conference. And we saw this argument back in 2006 when Ohio State and Michigan were number one and number two, but Florida vaulted Michigan on the final day of the season because they didn't want to have Big Ten versus Big Ten. I think you have to give another conference's team a chance, but let's say LSU goes on the road, loses by a field goal, right? And then you have LSU as a one-loss team sitting there with, let's say, a one-loss Oklahoma who lost at home to Texas Tech, or a one-loss Oregon whose only loss was to LSU. And there's going to be a lot of debate at the end of the season. Or let's face it, even an unbeaten Boise State team, which based on their schedule, I personally don't believe should be anywhere near the national title game. But if they're the only unbeaten aside from, let's say, Alabama, then LSU may have a very good argument to have a rematch. So you're right. Never say never. I doubt it's going to happen because voters hate rematches. But if it comes down to a resume of one-loss teams, whoever has one loss from this game may be the top one-loss team in the country. All right, well, with that in mind, let's worry about the first game they're going to play, and let's get to the picks. Janine, we're going to go ladies first here. Let me ask you this. LSU, Alabama, who's going to win?
I've debated it. I flipped two or three coins, and I think I'm going to go with LSU just because I think I have to at this point, right? Come on. Somebody's got to give them some love.
Hey, you know what? Go with your heart as long as you can justify it, right?
There you go.
All right, well, then let's go to you, Dan. Alabama or LSU, who's going to win?
Well, I'm going to kind of go out on a limb here and say that this game is going to not live up to the hype. It's going to be a very low-scoring match, and Alabama by three.
Well, it makes it interesting now because the picks are two for LSU because, of course, Nate picked Tigers earlier, and then Dan just picked Alabama. So I guess do I tie it or do I officially put it in with the picks in LSU's favor? Now, I'm going to make my point here very clear. I have LSU number one right now because I believe they played the tougher schedule than Alabama. But on the flip side of the coin, this game's at Alabama. And I think right now it's very, very difficult for me to imagine an LSU team going on the road and really dominating Alabama, whereas I think if things get out of hand one way or another, it would be in Alabama's favor. Now, I don't expect that to happen, but oftentimes – big-time games fail to live up to the hype, like Dan said. But everybody last year expected Oregon and Auburn to have just a 55-54 type game. We got 22-19. And everybody at Ohio State and Michigan was talking about defenses going into that game and which offense would make enough plays, and it ended up 42-39. So I'm going to go a little against the grain here. I'm picking Alabama to win, picking them to win 27-21. And I will add one more thing. I'm 36-15 in my picks this year every Friday at NationalFootballAuthority.com. So hopefully, this goes along with my picks for me. I'm taking Alabama and our panel. I think it's officially split at two, guys. So what do you think? Going to be one football, heck of a football game, huh?
Let's hope.
I'm hoping so, because you know how that hype machine can just get things churning to the point where people just have the highest expectations. And, I mean, it could be a blowout or a high-scoring game like the Ohio State-Michigan game. And, you know, people are going to be disappointed no matter which way you look at it. And all I want to do is be entertained and see some competitive football. That's all I can ask for.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. Hey, Janine, they don't have a countdown clock going down there in Baton Rouge, do they? Just like a big billboard somewhere counting down the minutes till kickoff?
If there isn't, I'm going to be shocked. I haven't seen it, but I'm sure it exists.
I think the only surprise I have is that unlike the Ohio State-Michigan game from 2006, they haven't had it on the bottom line ticker on ESPN. Remember, they had that on ESPN for a full week leading up to it. So maybe it's just because ESPN doesn't have the coverage of the game and they're all upset about CBS getting it for their one primetime game of the year. But either way, I think this is probably the most anticipated game of college football that isn't a title game since that Ohio State-Michigan game. I think we all are really looking forward to watching it. So, well, I'd like to thank very much, first of all, Nick Custer for coming on earlier. Janine, thank you so much for coming on tonight for the National Football Authority podcast. This is your first time on. Hope you had some fun with us.
Of course.
Well, we'll have to have you back on again soon, especially if LSU wins, because, you know, the Tigers are going to the national title game. We're going to have to get a little bit more Bayou insight, all right?
All right.
All right, sounds good. And, Dan, of course, it's always a pleasure to have you on here. And this is the first time I've actually got you to talk about some college football with me, so I'm pumped.
Thank you for having me, and I hope I did well.
Of course. Always good to hear from the CEO. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, that wraps up our LSU-Alabama theme podcast, the game of the century. Well, at least until the next game of the century comes around. Alabama-LSU, 8 p.m. Saturday night. Don't miss it. For everybody here at NationalFootballAuthority.com, I'm Matt Baxter. Thank you for joining us on this podcast, and enjoy the game. See ya!
You're listening to National Football Authority Radio. NationalFootballAuthority.com, the shooting star of football coverage on the internet.